Hey everybody, Jonathan Dorr with you once again. Welcome to the Catholic Teacher Podcast. Thanks as always for the privilege of your time. If no one else tells you, thank you for what you do every week. Your contribution in the lives of young people is so important. So thank you for what you're doing each and every day. It's often challenging. It's a vocation that calls for so much from each of us. But thank you for what you're doing, and thank you for tuning in to the Catholic Teacher Podcast, joining thousands of other teachers around the world in a few moments of encouragement, of being formed and inspired by other great Catholic educators like you from all over the world. Today, I've got a very special guest once again. I've got Principal Mark O'Farrell, who's from one of my all-time favourite dioceses in the world. It's a diocese here in Australia that for a long time I've said is doing some really remarkable stuff. Their approach to evangelisation of both parents and staff, and then also students, is quite wonderful. So Mark's been really embedded in that diocese for a long time. So I know you're going to get a lot out of listening to him. What we're really going to talk about in this episode is pilgrimage. He's recently been on a fascinating pilgrimage to the Holy Land and then to Rome. So he's going to share some of that. But we talk about how we can experience pilgrimage in our daily life. So if you're a regular listener, you know that I'm always talking about the importance of stillness, silence, contemplation, time with Jesus. And we often, you know, many of us sort of feel that we're never going to get that time for a big pilgrimage. Now, I think once or twice in life, hopefully you will get that. What we're going to hear about today is just this daily approach to time with the Lord. So listen in for how that could be applicable in your life. Housekeeping for me, as always, please, wherever you're hearing this, would you subscribe to the podcast. Grab the RSS feed, Apple Podcast link, Android, wherever you want to hear it, Spotify. We're just waiting for confirmation for them, but you can check out that Spotify link. So please subscribe. It's the easiest way for us to keep the episodes coming to you. Also, please check out the various links. There'll be links to Mark's Twitter feed. There'll be links to the Going Deeper program. As always, please check out the Going Deeper program. It's an amazing weekly formation encouragement program used by over 400 Catholic schools around the world. So check out the link to Going Deeper. It's just a brilliant weekly formation program for you and your fellow teachers. So please check that out. Check out my staff page for my seminars. All the links will be here. Wherever you're hearing this, check out the show notes. You'll find it there. But for now, that's it from me. Whatever you're doing, I hope you're going to enjoy this excellent, interesting, engaging, and applicable interview with Principal Mark O'Farrell. Hey, good afternoon to you.
How are you going, mate?
I'm doing well, my friend. I often like to say that schools are just wonderful places when the students go home. They're so quiet. You can actually hear yourself think.
Well, that's my school right now. Very quiet.
Good stuff, my friend. Have you had a good day?
Very busy day. Very busy day.
I remember when I did my master's in leadership and management in education, one of the things I always remember was an extensive study that showed principals on average get interrupted every 5 minutes. Do you make it that long before somebody turns up?
Well, I think the good plan is try not to go away on month-long pilgrimages.
Ah, yes.
Because what happens is whilst there's somebody else sitting in the chair as the acting, there's a lot of paperwork and issues that just kind of get put in a box somewhere.
Yeah, so they're like, the boss is away. We'll just put this in his in tray for when he gets back.
Yeah, so that's been my last week. So this is my second week back. So I've gotten over all the jet lag. But yeah, now I'm just dealing with all the paperwork. So
ladies and gentlemen of the Catholic Teacher Podcast globally, welcome to this edition. We're talking to the wonderful Mark O'Farrell, principal. It's where the buck stops. He's got a big sign on his desk that says the buck stops here at Macaulay Catholic College in Grafton, in my all-time favourite diocese in Australia, Lismore. Now, a little bit of trivia. Tell the people of the world, because remember that a large part of this audience will be in the US. Grafton floods a bit, doesn't it?
This is my third year, so I think we've had one flood every year since I've been here. Yep. Mm. And when I say flood, like
you get proper ones there.
We get ones where we actually live on the river, so we're about 13 meters above the top of the river, but when it floods into the house where I'm currently living. So that was, I think, the last big one they had was 5 years ago. So, but we had a big one last year. It was really in Lismore, but because of everything, people have to understand everything's connected by the rivers up here. So you get a little bit of rain in Lismore and it all the next day down in Grafton, we're about an hour and a half. We saw the rivers rising.
So torrential flood kind of sounds like your inbox at the moment since you've been away.
Correct, yes.
So tell everybody, let's talk about this. You have been on pilgrimage, which we're going to talk about in the life of a Catholic educator. Where did you go? And then we're going to get to why did you go, but where did you go?
So the first thing was, this has been something that I've been meaning to do for a while. So I've had, I guess, opportunities probably in the last 10 years, but going to the Holy Land was the key goal for me. And I've done a lot of study, and I guess the thing that I hadn't done was put scripture in context in the Holy Land. So I have been working in a group of schools in the Marist Brothers Network for most of my time. And so they offer, as part of their formation program in the Marist Schools Australia program, their top program is this 3.5-week pilgrimage, which takes people to the Holy Land. So to start with, we spent about 8 or 9 days principally in Jerusalem and then sort of taking day trips out to many places. But it was to get the essence of, as the organizer said, to understand where Jesus lived and walked the earth. So we started in the Holy Land and saw some amazing things, which no doubt I'll talk about. We then went to the center of the church in Rome. So we spent some time now. You know, you can't be a Catholic and not go to Rome. So the headquarters of our church now is in Rome. So we got to meet the Pope and we had an audience, and I got very close to the great man, got some great photographs. Yeah. And of course, you know, I was in a group with about 2,000 other people, but
so it was intimate.
It was, well, we're with the brothers. So part of this, I have been to St. Peter's before. Yeah. So this time was, we wanted the good seats. So we were staying a little bit out of Rome. So we got there, we left about 5 o'clock in the morning, and we were sort of at St. Peter's by 6:30. So we got some very good seats.
So in the life of a Catholic educator and a Catholic principal, I guess the theme I want to start talking to you about is my work over the last few years has been on, you know, looking at the burnout, the exhaustion that happens in this space. So many teachers giving, so many principals putting out fires. There's this sort of global lack of restoration, recovery. Where did this pilgrimage experience fit into that for you? Tell us about that. Did it recharge the batteries? What was that experience like?
Well, you've hit the nail on the head. I guess to give your listeners an idea, I've been teaching for about 20, I think it's 20 years now, and I've been in Catholic schools for that time and taught religion, been an RE teacher for most of my time before sort of moving into management roles. And I guess if you'd asked me, all I wanted to do was to be a leader of religious education, and sort of I've done all the jobs pretty much except for that job in a school. But yeah, you get to a point where you need, and I've said this to many people, where you need sustenance and you've got to nurture your own faith life. Because if you're, and certainly in my role, there's many, many challenges, as you would know. And one of the things I really identify with, I guess, since meeting you, Jonathan, is your messages go out globally. So there's a global audience now of Catholic educators, and we're all dealing with the same issues, which are how do we form ourselves? How do we form others? How do we form our students? These are all the things that, so it started with me. This was my own pilgrimage I had to do for myself. But at the same time, as I've come back now, I'm both a principal of a small Catholic school, and the other day in class, you know, I'm a teacher. I'm teaching Year 7 religion. And so up went the shots of me sitting atop Mount Nebo and praying, you know, like Moses did. So I really want to bring back all of those experiences. But, yeah, first and foremost, sustaining my own faith journey, Jonathan.
And that's the essence, right? Because I often say in seminars that you just can't give what you don't possess. So we've got so many people giving and trying to impart spiritual formation who are just not receiving it. So for people listening, I guess this is the first lesson, is that this investment in spiritual input, spiritual just time out, this pilgrimage experience. I mean, and obviously it doesn't have to be this long journey that you undertook, but this is the essence of it, is finding ways in which we can be restored and replenished. Looking back on that pilgrimage to the Holy Land, give us a couple of high points. Give us a couple of moments that for you were very powerful.
You know, so many. I mean, particularly, I'd been to Rome before, but the Holy Land for me was the big one, because wherever we went, and just to give you an example, you know, to be at the Sea of Galilee and to visit, every day we visited and prayed and had Mass in churches. And some of these churches were virtually on the site of some major biblical and historical event. So to be on the land that the disciples walked, that Jesus walked, to celebrate Mass, you know, in these places each day, that was, you know, one of the highlights. Daily Mass in these places where we were reading from the Scripture about these events. And then to be, we went out onto the Sea of Galilee the day that we were in Capernaum, and we were basically in an old boat, and one of our directors was taking us through one of the gospel stories, and they cut the engine and they said, now we want you just to go into prayer. So, you know, there was 30 of us out in the middle of the Sea of Galilee on this beautiful day, just taking time to pray. And we were looking out, we were looking at the water, and we were trying not to sneak our phones out to take shots. but it was as simple as that for me. That was a major moment. And we had moments like that every day.
What did you experience at that point? Like, I get, you know, to travel so much, and I got a memory of last year being in the Basilica in Minneapolis, and just such a beautiful building, and there's quite a rich experience for me in prayer there. But what did you feel? What was that experience for you out on the water?
Well, yeah, that's a great question. I got a very solid faith life, but in my journey of where I'm at, the things that are being, the challenges that are being thrown at Catholic, not just school leaders, but Catholic leaders in general, you know, to be a Catholic now, I think, and to stand up and proclaim your faith in front of others, I very much feel like a first century disciple on some days, because it's can be a pretty lonely place. And so, you know, I have always felt solid in my faith life, but I guess now I've been thrown into a job where, in between, the role description was, you've got to not only be attending Mass, but you have to be this advocate for your faith. You need to be sharing your story. And I've done that, you know, as a teacher, but now, you know, I'm doing it with parents. I'm doing it with teachers. And you have to be solid in your own witness, I think. That's what I'm learning. So for me, this was critical, because I just needed to be sitting in a place and imagining this was where Jesus walked the earth, you know, this Son of God. And particularly, you know, I guess I knew it, but some of the things that got reiterated to us throughout was, Jesus spent 80% of his public ministry in this very small area that we got to walk around and stay in. And, you know, that just blew my mind. Every time he went somewhere, the Mount of Beatitudes, the little towns, everything was really struck a chord with me, and it was amazing. Yeah.
Gosh, it's fascinating when you say that, because most of us don't know that given the global historical impact of Christianity, that he was operating in such a small geographic location. It's fascinating.
Yes. Yes, it is. And I think I knew it, but suddenly you're there. And I think our first couple of days we actually went into Jordan, and we climbed Mount Nebo. And, you know, Mount Nebo, this, you know, famous story there in the book of Deuteronomy about God revealing the promised land to Moses. And, you know, I'd read the story, like many of these stories, I read them, but to be suddenly atop 700 feet high, we didn't climb on foot. We went on a bus on a very, very windy day. But it gave the story new significance to be standing atop this mountain, looking across this promised land, and then the next day we were being baptized in the River Jordan, like Jesus. Yeah. The day after that, we were walking the shores of the Lake Galilee.
So how did this experience change you? Like, I'm listening to it. It's such a rich experience that so few of us get to have. What's the difference between the Marco Farrell that got off a plane in the Middle East and the one that got back on a plane? What happened? How, if in what ways did it change you?
Well, I think any doubts I had about my vocation, which, you know, I think we all have doubts about, you know, when I stepped into this job as principal, I wasn't really sure if I was up to the task. I mean, most days, you know, I still wonder. But the part that I'm 100% on is my faith and my leadership. When you put those two things together, my faith leadership part, you know, I feel like what the trip did for me was made me realize that I am so lucky, because, you know, probably similar to you, Jonathan, like, you know, I grew up in Canberra. I came through a Catholic family. I went to Morris College, Pierce. I had similar experiences to you. And now, you know, I'm in my 40s, I'm working in Catholic education. Things have changed a lot from when we went to school. And, you know, you've got to be up for it these days. And I think the trip was just to help me, and it reaffirmed to me that I have this strong faith. I love sharing my faith, and that's probably the best part I love about my job at the moment. I can stand up at assembly and put up, you know, I couldn't wait to get back in front of 500 kids. And, you know, like we normally do, we had our first assembly back and we start with prayer, and then I jumped in and there's my first slideshow image of wow. You know, me in the Holy Land. I did one to the staff the next day. I did a couple of photographs to year seven. So now I'm talking to you. There's been no shortage of, my wife keeps saying, put the photographs away.
But do you know what's interesting about that is, I don't know whether I heard this years ago, but you look at the Annunciation and Mary receives this amazing news. And I was saying this in a seminar in London recently, that you don't, you know, Mary didn't just take a selfie, put on Instagram, hashtag Mother of God. Her immediate movement was to go out and to share the news and to support her cousin Elizabeth. And it seems to be the nature of the gospel that when we encounter what Jesus does, we actually have this innate spiritual desire to impart that to others. Mate, what I wanted to ask is, there's a key phrase you mentioned a minute ago. You talked about faith leadership. So here's how I want to frame this, and I want to say it delicately. My experience with Catholic education, very much in this country, a little bit less so in the US, but many principals seem to be running quite scared, in the sense that enrollments, academic outcomes are driving the agenda, and there's this embedded kind of fear that really what matters is bums on seats, keeping all the stakeholders happy. But many seem to struggle to take the risk, and I use that word specifically, the risk that if we really tried to build a genuine gospel-centered culture, an evangelistic community in this school, then can we risk the possibility that God might honor that and allow the kingdom to come in this place? Now, I don't mean to be frivolous and say, well, we don't focus on finances, but is that fair? Do you think, and I'm not trying to be judgmental here, I'm just going, because I can understand the pressures that principals face, but what do you think? Do you think that if people take the risk of genuine faith leadership, And I'll just finish by saying, I often say to people, we need to make our problems God's problems, right? That if we make the survival of our school his problem by building the kind of communities that he asks us to build, can we risk that he'll take care of that? And I guess, I don't want to labor the point, but my sense is that if we had the courage to do that, we might end up also building very good schools academically, because that Christian vision of the person means that we honor that as well. So what are your thoughts on that? What makes it so hard for principals to take this risk? What are your thoughts on what I'm saying?
Well, you've hit the nail on the head. You've given a big one.
it's like that old Fawlty Towers episode. Don't mention the war. It's like, yeah. Don't mention the way things actually are. Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah. Now, before I answer, do you have anybody from the Lismore Diocese listening to me?
I'll see if I can apply a geo filter to look. On that, I've said to people around the world that Lismore Diocese is the best I've seen globally, and I genuinely have said that. And I've said that in Lismore, and I've said it all over the planet, because you've had, you know, bishops previously and currently who are people of faith and are supporting it. You've got some great people in head office, and there just seems to be something good happening there, and there has been for a while. So anything you say will probably not be used against you, probably.
No, well, I think it's now's a good time to mention. I mean, I've got a couple of responses to the very challenging question. And I think many leaders or directors of mission, many directors of schools within dioceses, I've come from private school to a diocesan system. So I know I can talk about private schools in Sydney and Brisbane. And now I'm in a systemic, you know, parish based school. So I think I've seen a bit, and I'll start with in a roundabout way that for me, it's all about, always has been, role models. So I was telling someone the other day, and this comes out with the kids, I talked to the teachers about it, and we're planning a bit of a proclaim event at our school in the Year of Youth in a couple of weeks. And we've got some great people planning that. And anyway, I was telling this guy the other day about, I can remember the year 1982 when I was sitting at Marist, Canberra, in the gymnasium that's still there, and the headmaster came out and gave out a prayer card to every student in that hall. And on the back of that prayer card on that day, a man was being canonized, Maximilian Kolbe, in Rome. And I didn't know who he was, but I've still got that prayer card. And I remember Brother Joseph, who was the headmaster at the time, was a man of deep faith, and I was lucky enough later on to end up working with him. But he left an impression on me that day that I'll never forget. And you know, all I got was, I can remember, was that prayer card. So I kind of take that example of, you know, about your risking. Well, whatever it is, you know, 30, 40 years later, now times have changed, education in Australia has changed, and you're spot on. There's no religious, there's hardly any religious left. Now, I got brought up with the Maris brothers and the sisters. There's no religious left in schools virtually anymore. So what's been handed over in Catholic education in our country, It's over to people like me, the lay people, and there's huge challenges, because I think the rules that the system used to operate under with the religious, who have done so much in our the story of Catholic education in Australia, but there's a different set of rules that apply to laity, I guess, and part of that, what you led into, was the pressure that we're under, because you're right. What's more important, the Catholic mission of the school or having enrolments to keep the school open? You know, like that's the dilemma that I face, our systems face. We're in a regional area. We've got quite a few schools in this area, but I know many, many schools are facing this. So the common response is, we've got to get bums on seats. We've got to get the kids through the door. And I think a lot of people seem to be happy if, you know, if they can claim, listen, we're 80% Catholic enrolments. That's a great furphy, that number, because I don't think the school that I was at 5 years ago or the one before that was any more Catholic than the one I'm at now. The numbers that people put forward about, you know, you've got that many Catholics, you must be a very Catholic school. I know of plenty of schools in Sydney that are very Catholic, and no more kids go to Mass there on weekends than they do at my school. Yeah. So we've all got the same issue. It's just around what people are putting forward as, do we have an issue here or not? Like, I think we're all in this together.
What I'm getting at, and this is, you know, I've probably only really got one point. I'm just saying the same thing, you know, for the last few years, and I don't know if I'll ever going to be saying much different to this, is I think we've constructed an artificial dichotomy, which is what you've just articulated, is people go, oh, no, we've got to keep the enrolments up. How do we do that? Well, we've got to have really good test scores, and we've got to have happy parents and great pastoral care and student well-being, and then people will hear about it and send their kids. And I'm like, yeah, but if we have a strong faith community, a genuine Catholic faith community, what's likely to happen is that the staff are going to be, you know, passionate about their faith. They're going to be animated by the Holy Spirit. So their pastoral care is going to be better. There's less burnout. There's, you know, and I guess what I'm trying to say is that if they don't have to be separate propositions. Like, I think if we really build authentic and we risk, take this risk I'm talking about, which is what you're talking about, like if Mark O'Farrell is living his faith, he's going to treat his staff in a particular way. Now, not perfectly, because this side of heaven, we're all going to need improvement. But if you're animated by the Holy Spirit, you're going to try and be a certain kind of principle, and your staff are going to feel a certain kind of way, and you're going to model a way of a Christocentric model of relating to young people. So what I'm wondering is if we take this risk of really doubling down on our faith formation, that we might end up attaining the goal that we're actually after, which is creating really positive gospel communities that people want to send their kids to.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that I see in this diocese, and I know, you know, you've done a lot of work, just, you know, the Monday prayer. In our diocese now, we're trying to push out, put in front of teachers, simple resources like yours, like that they're going deeper. That's the first time I've been exposed. I mean, we've always led staff prayer on Mondays, but in terms of the let's put a little bit more in front of teachers now, the old days of just the RE teachers that happen to have done a master's in theology and, you know, they've got to know all the stuff, we're now saying it really is, if you want to work in Catholic education, it's the mission belongs to all of us. And I think part of the formation too that I'm seeing is When I stand up and I've got about 50 or 60 teachers, and that's right from the office to teacher assistants, groundskeepers, we're all in this together, and we've got to be pushing the mission. And we've got a wonderful new bishop, and he's very much, you know, the journey of evangelization here is, I think it's undeniable, but the breakdown in the family unit, which, you know, has happened since I was a kid, that's had a really big impact, because the things that I'm seeing, the families coming to us, I'm gobsmacked by some kids, even coming out of Catholic primary schools, but some I've got coming from, you know, state schools that were baptized Catholic, but know nothing really of Jesus or all the story, all the gospel stories. So when I sit in enrolment interviews and I hear that, it's like one of those moments where you think, this is why I'm in education. 100%. Because, yeah, I'm in education because you see it, it's crumbling. It really is crumbling. But the good thing is about, and you'll probably get onto this, but our school in our town, we used to be right next to the church, which I imagined back in the day in the 80s when it was like that, must have been a wonderful thing for the kids to be walking into the church all the time. We're now located on a big plot of land outside of Grafton, and the church is a very lonely-looking place. Yeah.
But listening to you talk about that, right? So we're going back to, you look at the founders of the great missionary Catholic educational orders. So your Marcelin Champagnes, your Don Boscos, your De La Salles, all of these people, and you know, people like Nano Nagel, MacKillop, all of them, you know, they didn't say, "Oh, let's start a school for all these really well-churched, educated kids." They're like, "Let's start accessible education for kids that may have heard nothing of the faith." In fact, Champagne's story begins there at the Montaigne incident with a young boy that had never heard of God at all. So I listen to you and I think there's two ways to come at this, right? One way is, well, we're already so stretched. We're trying to do enrollments. We're trying to preach the gospel and catechize these kids. It's either a burden or this is the mission. The mission isn't, you know, for years I've been saying good humanist education can be done in a secular setting. So what we have the option to do here, and you talk about those interviews and you meet these children of never, I mean, this is missionary stuff, right? This is a chance to build a school community where the gospel is actually preached and young people have a chance to know Christ. Because once they're out of that school environment, we don't know what God's, you know, going to do, but it's less likely they're going to hear that gospel message. So it's really this concept of a missionary center, it's becoming bigger than just a school. It's a place where the gospel can be preached and people can encounter Christ. I want to ask you, my friend, this concept of pilgrimage. Now, most of the listeners are unlikely to get on a plane and get 3 weeks in the Holy Land and Rome, as much as they might like to. How can they apply this concept of pilgrimage to their daily life? They're tired, maybe. Their people are burned out listening to this. They're given 100%. I've got some thoughts on this, but I want to hear from you. How can this idea of pilgrimage be something people could apply in their daily life?
Okay, that's a great question. I think there's a lot of things that you're right. I would be advocating, and I would say this for my teachers, that I would want everyone at least once in their career to have experienced what I did. And I think that's possible, because it's taken me 20 years to get there. But along the way, I've done lots of little mini retreats, and some of those have been daily. Some of them have been 3 days or 5 days. They've been little programs. It's about time out. And, you know, I've got my leader of mission at the moment. She's on a 5-day retreat in Melbourne.
So good.
So I've, you know, amongst my leadership team, you know, I've got another, when going on another retreat, on an Ignatian retreat in the middle of the year. I've got others booked in for stuff next year. I've got some of my religious teachers who are going on 3-day little formation programs, you know, hopefully too. So
are you driving that, or are you, as a faith leader in that community, are you saying, hey, are you tapping people on the shoulder and saying, I care about you, yep, I value you, would you have a think about doing this?
No, it's spot on. It's recognizing, I guess I'm really just copying what, I guess, really my formation program has been in my time, which was always, you'd know this, you know, teaching RE, it's a tough gig. When you're a full-time religion teacher, like, it's a tough gig. So, you know, for someone to tap you on the shoulder and say, hey, Mark, would you like to go on a 3-day retreat to Mittagong? When that first happened to me in my first year, I said, great, I loved it. Went off with a mate, and, you know, that was the start of my formation program in the Marist network. So I think in answering your question is, you've got to have a sense of this all the time. So you're right, it's not just for me. This was something about 20 years ago, you know, when I started teaching. I've had lots of little retreat encounters leading up to something where I needed time out. And the, you know, our year 12s have just come back from retreat. And, you know, I wrote the last week's newsletter about my retreat and their retreat. It's the same thing. You know, we took them out of school for 3 days to get them right away in this beautiful retreat setting in Grassy Head so that they could have time away. And I was explaining in the newsletter about, well, you can't sort of do this stuff if you just stay home and look after the dog and the kids. Yeah. And, you know, so the time thing is crucial, because What have I learned from it? Well, I knew this before I went away, but the focus on you must make time for daily prayer.
100%. Now, yeah.
When I was on a pilgrimage together, you know, we had to be at the chapel every morning at 8 o'clock, straight after breakfast. You know, it was an easy thing. We're in this routine. It gets a bit harder when you get back to work and you've got 1,000 emails and meetings and, you know, your days vary. But the beauty for me is I constantly check in online with stuff, like the amount of, and you'd be the same, you know, like the amount of apps there now with daily prayer and meditation, yeah, the stuff that ping on my phone. Sometimes I might only get a couple of minutes, but we all get those moments, and you've got to take them where you can say, this is a time where, and I'm a great believer in reading the word. So for me, it's about just what's the daily gospel saying? Yeah. And I certainly, you know, this week I don't get to Mass every day. We get some opportunities. Other days it'll be reading something off the phone. We have collective group prayer on a Monday and a Friday. We pray in every meeting. You know, I try to build it in where I'm at least, I get home and go, I've prayed, you know, 5 times today in different settings. So it's about training yourself to, you know, do things like that. The other thing which I brought back, and I haven't done this, and I bet you do this, I think I've seen photographs of you doing it, is journaling.
100%, yeah.
We carried, you can see my journal here, it's all sort of tagged and ripped and so forth, but it's a beautiful little book we got, and everywhere we went, when we jumped off the buses in these places, we said, bring your journal, because we sat atop a mountain or we sat in the desert, we had an hour, and we prayed and journaled.
Wow.
So, you know, that's just a snapshot, Jonathan, of some of those little things that you've got to make time for yourself. And I believe as an educator, we get so worn down with things that you've got to take some time out to recharge. But at the same time too, build things into your routines at school, where schools are great for that. There are many things where you can just slot in prayer, slot in devotion, slot in you know, we do adoration on a Friday in our church here with you behind youth group on a Friday. So there's lots of opportunities. You've just got to be smart on how you, I guess, manage
100%. I'm listening to you and I'm thinking, when you talk about journaling, I have a line that I love to share with people, which is a quote from Thomas Aquinas, who famously said that the hand is the conjoined instrument of the mind. I always liked that line. It was like that what we write has a way of impacting our consciousness and our mind than simply thinking about something. So journaling's huge. And I like what you've said about this, you know, if we can't get 3.5 weeks in the Holy Land and Rome, what we can get is 3.5 minutes of silence at the start of a class, or, you know, 10 minutes of silence in a chapel before school starts. Like, we can get these constant moments throughout the day. You know, I know the Sydney Archdiocese brought in the Angelus, you know, just so tens of thousands of students at 12 o'clock every day would have this moment of recollection, you know, the sanctification of time. So I guess, Mark, what we're saying for the listeners really is, it's like that old book, you know, that well-known book, Too Busy Not to Pray. People look at my life across the different things that I do, and people are convinced, you know, I have a ridiculously busy life. But honestly, if people could see the disciplines that I have, you know, just recently my spiritual director's like pushed me back to music. I used to get guitar lessons, so I've recently gone back to getting guitar lessons once a week, and I can promise you at 8 o'clock on a Thursday night, the last thing I want to do is go out. But I go to this lesson and I find each night I'm just sitting down doing a bit of work with the guitar just to recover. So I want to encourage everybody listening, whether it's guitar, whether it's something else, find something along with the spiritual disciplines, but find something that just restores you. So Marco Farrell, what do you do? It's a guitar. What do you do that's for your replenishment? Not that I didn't tell you I'd ask you this, but what do you do just to balance it all out?
Well, I think I've got a bit like you. I love study and reading.
Yeah.
So I've got a couple of, I'm in between courses at the moment, done a master's of Ed Leadership and then a master's of theology. Wow. So tossing up about doing some doctoral study, and then I found one of my online buddies is doing some master's in Steubenville.
Wow.
Of all places, Jonathan.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm looking for, I guess, study's a great one for me, the reading. I've got two books next to my bed at the moment, one called Tools and Fuels.
Oh, I heard of that.
Yeah, it's this guy, Jonathan E. Doyle, How Catholic Teachers Become Saints, Beat Burnout and Save the World.
Amen.
Little tid. And then the other one's by a guy called Charles Chaput, Strangers in Strange Land.
Yeah.
Chaput, yeah. And, you know, I don't know if you've read that
one,
but living the faith in a post-Christian world. I spend a lot of time exercising, and I try to now when I'm out bike riding or running, you know, take the phone and plug in and listen to something so that, you know, if I'm not reading as much during the term because I've got to read other stuff for school that's not as exciting, you know, I'm keeping up with short bits on Twitter and LinkedIn and then I'm reading, you know, a couple of books.
And, you know, when you're out running, you can listen to good Catholic podcasts, for example, like this one.
Yes, well, the other thing about living in the country, which you, I don't know if you've heard this, but you've got to drive everywhere in our diocese.
Oh,
So I spend a lot of time driving.
Just listening to
stuff. You go to meetings and podcasts are the way. So it's you don't have to, you know, with Audible now and things like that, you just get so much quality time.
That's good stuff. My friend, last couple of things I wanted to talk about, I want to ask you is just briefly to summarize, we're talking about pilgrimage, whether that is the rich experience of a longer pilgrimage or pilgrimage just in daily life, just encouraging all the listeners to find some daily time. You're giving too much not to do this. I want to ask you to finish. What advice do you have? What do you think's crucial for Catholic principles? And then we're going to ask the same question around Catholic teachers themselves. What do you think is kind of crucial at this moment in history for Catholic principles to be real faith leaders? What do they need to do? What should they be thinking about?
Well, I know many, and I belong to a great group. So I haven't met a bad principle yet, Jonathan. So with the group that I know, and I'd say that my general advice would be we're united in it's a tough gig. But at the same time, our vocation, I believe, if we've got that in common, you've got to be 100%, you know, 100% committed to this. And leading, I would say, your teachers, and it's all about the teachers, putting all your resources into teacher formation so that the teachers, because they're at the coalface of evangelization, I might be at the coalface of enrolment interviews, but I don't teach as much as some of, you know, my teachers in my school. So, you know, I take one class, I get around and try to be involved with the kids, but it's the ones that access the kids every day. And so in some ways it's not what I'm saying once a week, it's what they're saying every day. So whether it's in homeroom where they see the kids every day for 15 minutes or whether it's in the maths class or the English class, if you are investing in teacher formation, religious formation. And so, you know, we do that in many ways. We take days out called spirituality days. Many schools do that once or twice a year. Many of us wish we could do it more. But, you know, there's a lot of other things that get in the way. So my advice would be keep investing, invest heavily, because I know I am, and I'm starting to get some great rewards from the teachers just in a short period of time. Invest in formation and you'll start to get some great results, I believe, in your schools.
100%, my friend. I've just actually earlier today interviewed in another one of my podcasts, I need a guy who's an incredibly successful businessman, winemaker, and globally successful. We just had him here in the office today, and just he finished this podcast talking so much about his people and sowing into his people and So I think you're just onto something. I think it's faith leadership. It's modeling for staff that it's okay to be a person of faith, that it's okay to pursue faith, and then really sowing into them. My friend, to finish, what do Catholic teachers need? What do they need at this moment to do this journey? What advice, experience can you offer to a listener now who might be tired, struggling, burned out? What advice or guidance do you have for Catholic teachers?
Well, I would say, you know, if that was one of my teachers, I understand the burnout, because the book, probably the title you got, it's a great read. Why I'd say so many people bought it, because they can relate to it straight away. If you're in religious education, that's a tough gig to sell, because the kids don't really want to hear about it.
You're like, no, please, sir, tell me more about transubstantiation.
Yeah. Religion, can we get something else today? Right. So for you and me, and I think for many people I know, I've got some great teachers at my school, and it's their passion. When it's your passion, it's not work. It's just you go in there and it flows out of you. And I'd like to think, you know, I may not be the world's best principal, but I'd say in terms of faith and mission, and, you know, I'd, at least if people said, you know, Mark's 100% on that, you know, it sort of oozes out of him about faith, because I'm talking about it. You're right. Hopefully I'm modeling it to all of my teachers and to my religious education teachers. Because, when I say religious education, I talk about all my teachers, but the ones that, you know, that small group of maybe 10 or 15 that are teaching the RE curriculum amidst, you know, science or maths or English classes, I say it's the most important thing. It's why Catholic schools exist. I know there's this big debate about should Catholic schools exist, and in some countries, you know, they're disappearing. But we've got great schools. You know, my PP, my parish priest, says we've got some great schools. He, in fact, came out of a public school and became a priest. So he often says we've got great schools. So if you want an education, you know, there's other schools. If you want a great religious education or a great Catholic education, you know, that's our main goal. So we've got to have so investing in the teachers to say, come on, let's go. My job's just to resource whatever need. Yeah, they have.
100%. Yeah, it's listening to you. It's like it's not just a great religious education. It's a great human formation too. I think we do that really well. That a great Catholic school like yours provides that religious formation, but it also provides a very rich human formation. And when you read the church documents on education, that comes through, that we're forming people in the image and likeness of Christ. So there's a very specific approach to the person and to what we're trying to bring about by the end of their journey with us. My friend, if I want to stay married, I need to get home. My long-suffering wife has been very patient with all the interviews we're doing lately. But, mate, listen, thank you for your wisdom. Thank you for sharing some thoughts on pilgrimage. Thank you for your courage. These days, working with so many schools around the world, it takes courage for a principal to stand up and go, you know what? I love my faith. My life's about Jesus Christ and sharing him with my staff and young people. And I believe that if more people find that courage to create that in their schools, then I've got to believe that if we're faithful to what God's put on our lives, and it's his job to be faithful to us. I'm just convinced. I just think if we double down on becoming gospel communities, that I don't think we're going to struggle for the other things. So, my friend, if no one else says this to you, because I know they don't say it to principals very often, but thank you so much for what you're doing. Thank you for making time for us today, and may God bless your work.
No, Jonathan, good on you. And I just want to say, too, back to you, mate. You're doing great work. When I've got more time, I'll tell you a great story. You've had a massive impact in my community. I've got a young guy that's, you don't even know, but in some of your earlier work, you know, when you came into schools to talk, I've got a young bloke here working with me now that talks about the influence you had many years ago on him, and he's one of these top young religious educators. So, you know, I'm connected to you in a great way. So if you ever get up here, you know, to see some of the influence. So thank you for your work that you're doing, and you're inspiring many. So good on you. Keep
it up.
Thank you,
my friend. Thank you so much. I do appreciate it. Thank you for making time to be on the Global Catholic Teacher Podcast.
Good on you, Jonathan. Thank you, my friend. See you, mate.
Well, there you go. How good was that? Thank you, Mark O'Farrell, for making time for us. Thank you, listener, for joining us. I personally loved doing that, just hearing Mark's real witness as a faith leader in his community. I think we're all called to that in some way, whether we're leading in a formal position or whether it's just the example and the leadership of our daily life and how we evangelize daily. But as always, we can't give what we don't possess. So I hope that you took from that the encouragement of some form of daily pilgrimage. Maybe it's just a pilgrimage from the staff room or the faculty room down to the chapel, where you can just have 5 or 10 minutes before school starts to be with Jesus and just have that time each day. So please check out the links. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. The links are all here. Make sure you check out the Going Deeper program. Tune in again next week. We've got some really fantastic interviews coming up, and I don't want you to miss any of them. But for now, thanks for what you do every week. I'm Jonathan Doyle for the Catholic Teacher Podcast. Going to speak to you again very soon.